answering your top financial questions for the past 20 years. It's Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
Glad you are with us on this weekend as we talk about the world of finance, money, retirement. Both myself and my co-host, we're both financial advisors, certified financial planner, chartered financial consultant. We spend our weekdays meeting with people like yourself, helping them make wise choices with their finances. And we come here on the weekends to help you and to be your financial advisor on the air. And if you'd like to join the program, if you've got a question for us, it's a nice way to deal with a financial advisor. You don't have to actually...
You don't have to go to their office.
You don't have to talk to... You can be anonymous. You don't have to worry about someone trying to sell you something.
You can make up your net worth.
You can make up your name. Make up whatever you want.
Join the show.
Hopefully you're trying to find some value. If someone's recommending you buy something, or you're wondering if you've got things set up properly, you wonder if you should be making some changes.
Whether you should be putting money in your 401k, 403b, if someone's trying to sell you a big fat life insurance policy or an annuity that does backflips and never has any market exposure. Or
I saw an ad today, 8%, guaranteed 8%.
Guaranteed for what?
Who's guaranteeing 8%?
No one's guaranteeing 8%.
I'm not that guaranteed 8%.
Why would you have to run an ad if you could guarantee 8%?
You would just go to the bank, borrow a bunch of money, invest it at 8%.
You'd have a line around the block if you could guarantee 8%.
Why would you run an ad? That's pretty good. Why would you run an ad?
If you could guarantee it, could you imagine you'd have everything 8%. If you had,
how's an insurance company going to pay you 8%? The mortgage on this building is an insurance company. It's like 4.5%.
Yeah, a little less than that, but yes. If you could guarantee 8%, you'd have every pension plan in America lined up at your door.
So at Hanson McLean,
we don't guarantee 8%.
No, we don't care. 7.5.
We do not.
That ain't. I'm joking.
So,
and I was looking at. I'm not gonna go. So anyway,
if you'd like to join the show, 888-2 Hanson. That's 888-2. H-A-N-S-O-N, or 242-6766. And if you've just tuned us in and you haven't heard us before, it's because we're relatively new to your area. So we've been doing a radio show in Sacramento for 20-plus years, and we have, in May of 2015, went on in the Bay Area on KGO 810. Denver, we started in January on KOA. In L.A., the Patriot AM 1150, and in San Diego, KOGO. That's News Radio 600 KOGO.
That's right.
So welcome.
Glad you are, if you are new to us.
Feel free to join us at 888-242-6766.
Great program lined up. We got to obviously take a few of your calls and talk about some things that are maybe going on in the financial world, financial news, because that's always... Well, actually, we don't, you know, it's funny. We don't tend to talk about, here's what the market did last week or done. If there's something really newsworthy, we'll talk about it. But otherwise, some of that stuff's just noise. But we try to come up with some things that might be out of the ordinary. Here's what I saw recently. This is actually a very interesting story. I think it's interesting. I don't know if you know the story, Pat. So Valeant, the big Canadian drug company, was a stock darling for a couple of years. I mean, it was just stock kept going higher and higher. And one of those that you'd read about, oh, it's a fantastic thing. Well, maybe there wasn't.
Maybe not so much.
So suddenly about everything you can imagine that could go wrong or the company went wrong, and their stock just came crashing down. I mean, dramatic crash on this. Well, there was a particular mutual fund that had a large concentration of their fund in the stock. This was a non-diversified mutual fund. And some mutual funds are like that. They hold
like 20 or 30 stocks.
It had 30% of its portfolio in this one company in Valeant.
Wow.
Okay. Well, now that the stock's way down, people are beginning to yank their money out of this fund. They're thinking, wait a minute, why do I want to own this fund? There's one 401k, 60% of the assets, a small company. Small company's 401k, 60% of the assets were in this one particular mutual fund.
Whose?
Some small company I was reading about. Small company.
Put 60% of their participants' assets were in this particular mutual fund.
I have a feeling there'll be a lawsuit against the executives of the company.
Yes.
Because they have a fiduciary responsibility. And they might have...
Protect people from their selves.
Themselves, I guess, right? Themselves. So, anyway, here's the interesting thing about this story. So people have been cashing out. There's $5.5 billion in this fund. And so this guy asked for his cash. They sent him a bunch of cash, but 5% of the money they sent was stock in a different company, in O'Reilly's, you know, the auto parts store, O-O-O O'Reilly, right?
Mm-hmm.
So they sent him cash and a little bit of shares in O'Reilly. This guy's like, what the heck is this?
Why shares in O'Reilly?
They could pick whatever they wanted. So this mutual fund owned a bunch of different shares.
Uh-huh.
Right? This is, I'd never heard of anything like this.
Yeah, but it makes sense.
It's if you read in the policy, in the perspective, it's there. I've
never known it.
20 some odd years in this industry, I'd never seen this before.
Never saw anyone send shares.
But their fund policy that allows it to give shareholders mostly stock if they're pulling out $250,000 or more. And that said they've done thousands of in-kind transactions over many years and that the majority are done for redemptions in excess of $1 million. Thousands of in-kind transactions.
That would be very frustrating.
Not with public investors. Can you imagine? You have a mutual fund, you go to sell it.
And then all of a sudden they're sending you shares of these companies.
Now you got to go out and sell them.
And you have to sell them.
And the reason they're doing this
is... And you have to put them in a brokerage account and then or sell them to the transfer agents or...
Yeah, I don't know if they're sending you their certificates themselves.
Oh, they're probably at a transfer agent.
It probably are to begin with. Actually, if you held it direct, they'd probably send you the cash. They'd probably be one of the first screens they look at. Is this held at Schwab or Fidelity?
Or do you hold it right at the mutual fund company?
Yeah. And so...
Strange.
Yeah. Strange. The fund was
By its very nature, a mutual fund that is not highly diversified like that, you would expect large volatility in it.
Large volatility.
Not just a little. Not volatility. But here's the interesting volatility.
So this fund, and I'm not going to... You know, people say, what's the name of the fund? It's almost irrelevant because... It doesn't matter what fund it is because there's a number of funds other just like this. And when I say just like this, one thing we've clearly noticed at Hanson McLean over the years, we've been working with investors for 20 some odd years, 4,000 households we manage, a couple billion dollars under our care. Well, here's what ends up happens. People will look at track record. They go to firms like Morningstar, which have great for data. And they'll look at a track record and they'll say, well, I know one thing. I want to make sure I've got a fund that's got 5 stars. Only 5-star funds. I want to look at good fund. And I want to make sure it's got a good track record. Well, the funds that are going to have the best track records are going to be the ones that have held securities that have recently run up in value. And if, let's say, over a 5-year period, a manager could actually had mediocre year 1, mediocre year 2, mediocre year 3, home run year 4, home run year 5, and suddenly look like they're genius. You look at the last 5 years, like, man, top of the list last 5 years. It might have been they just got on some lucky bets the last year or two.
Or one or two. Yeah, not many, depending upon, especially if it's a non-diversified portfolio like that. It holds less than 30 stocks. If you've got one or two stocks in there that have done well, you've done well.
On this one, Valiant stock was over a third of their portfolio.
Yeah.
Huge. So... what ends up happening is investors will pile in these funds that look like they've had great short-term performance. And what often ends up happening is people are buying those securities that have just run up in value. They are buying high.
And that is why, if you look at rates of returns on mutual funds and what the mutual fund does and what the average investor has done in that mutual fund, there's a large gap between those two.
If I... were a betting man, I would say you're probably better off buying this fund today. The same manager, good long-term track record, made some bad steps.
Today? You wouldn't buy him. It's not enough.
I wouldn't buy. Only reason that the challenge there is the drama that is happening internally in the organization.
It's brutal.
Yeah. It might not ever recover.
Yes, yes.
Because, you think about this. If you work at this mutual fund, the one we're talking about here, you work at the mutual fund, you go to work every day. Every day you're trying to figure out how do we sell enough positions to send money back to people. You got angry customers calling. Nobody's having fun.
No one's having fun. People are worried about their jobs. There's not big potlucks on Friday afternoon.
No, everyone would be worried about their job. You're in a mutual fund where there's massive redemptions, of course you'd be worried about your job.
And that's why there's an argument for both index funds.
That's why index funds are and ETFs are growing in popularity.
And they're an important part of any portfolio.
And why, yeah.
As are some actively managed funds.
As are some actively managed sometimes.
Sometimes. Not always, not but sometimes.
Anyway, it's just interesting. And
that's what people...
This isn't the first time we've seen stories like this.
I was talking in the some investor dealy not too long ago, and someone asked me...
An investor dealy? Conference of some sort?
They asked the...
Seminar, workshop?
Something like that. I don't even remember where, but the question was...
Dial-in advisor?
I only like index funds. Do you buy index funds? Yes.
But I only like index funds.
That's what the person said. I only like index funds.
Okay.
Okay. But I said, but there are times when it should be indexed and there's times when it shouldn't. It depends on the asset class and where you are in a cycle with that asset.
Yeah, maybe. There's always debate on that.
Yes.
You can argue both sides of the coin.
I can.
And that's why, for most investment strategies, it's not all comes down to one thing. When somebody says, I've got it all figured out, this is exactly how it's do it. Nothing else is good. This is the only only thing that's great. That is a recipe for disaster. Right?
That is hubris.
Yeah. And pride comes before the fall in many areas of life and in investing as well, which I'll never forget the time I was a 1999 Y2K party and someone was bragging that they were the proud owner of, and they started naming off these tech stocks. And I remember walking away and saying, the proud owner? Proud owner. Of course, this is right before they all blew up. And you knew it was all so frothy at that time. It didn't make sense.
Yeah, it was frothy.
And pride comes before the fall. Anyway, Hanson McClain, we have a great program lined up. And, of course, we will take some calls. If you want to join the show, and we've got a couple lines open. We'll begin taking some calls here soon. Our contact number to join Hanson McClain is 1-888-2-HANSON, 1-888-2-HANSON. Numerically, it's 1-888-242-6766. And you can always go to our website, moneymatters.com. Send us a question that way. Every once in a while, we'll take a question on the air. But actually, now I'm thinking about it. If you really want your question answered on the air, then you probably should just call.
But you could go to moneymatters.com and type the question in there.
They could certainly go and put the question.
Or look at your book, moneymatters.com/book.
We thought a lot about that one.
We had a marketing team all over that.
Anyway, we're going to take a quick break. So stick around for more. This is Hanson McClain Advisors Money Matters with Scott Hanson, Pat McClain. We'll be right back.
Got a question? Visit moneymatters.com or call 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. Advice without an agenda. It's back to Hanson McClain's Money Matters.
Coming to ya.
Oh, look at you.
Blues Brothers.
Is that who this is?
Yeah. There's some useless knowledge.
Yeah. Oh, our John tells us that they stole the song from somebody
it's
else.
It's still the Blues Brothers.
They might
Brothers
have actually
to me.
Bought rights to the song or rented it.
I don't know if they stole it.
They were on a mission from God. They couldn't have stolen it.
No.
You don't steal when you're on a mission from God.
No. There we go. Huh? We should not do any sort of movie critic things.
No. You think?
No.
I don't think we should.
So, Scott, but what you should be a critic of, and I've read a couple of the reviews on Amazon, getting good reviews, is Scott Hanson's new book, Personal Decision Points, 7 Steps to Your Ideal Retirement Transition. This is Scott's second book on personal finance.
That's correct.
And Scott, I don't if you didn't know this, Scott writes a regular column for Kiplinger's. He's also... occasionally on Forbes as well as CNBC.
That's right.
And book came out this week.
I wrote a weekly column for about 9 years. Ended up being syndicated through Scripps Howard, and then I just needed to take a break.
So this book is out. If you go to Amazon, you can get it. And if you belong to the Amazon Club where you borrow books or Amazon, I don't think it's Amazon Prime, but
I think it is. That's what it's.
Is it on there? Because anyway, I used to belong to the one where you pay $9.95 a month and certain books you could download for free. But it's on that. Or you could go to our website, moneymatters.com/book. And it's a pretty easy read, couple hours, but it covers the 7 personal decision points. So if you're within 5 years of retiring.
Or about ready to retire or recently retired.
It is worth a read.
Yeah, it really is.
And this comes from a practicing financial advisor. I've been doing it for almost 25 years, and meeting with people just like yourself.
I've been doing it for more than 25 years.
Have you really?
Yeah, June of 1990.
I've been doing it longer than you then.
I know you have.
I didn't know how long I've been doing it.
You were in the business when I started.
Well, not really the business.
The business.
Anyway, we'll have to join Hanson McLean. If you'd like to be part of Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
But I wouldn't. May I finish plugging your book?
Yes.
I'm plugging it. So please take a read. Personal Decision Points, 7 Steps to Your Ideal Retirement Transition by Scott Hanson.
And there's a nice little picture on the website, too. I had we were trying to Photoshop me and lean it against a giant book, but I don't know what happened with that one.
Did they really?
That was my idea. I think everyone else thought it was silly. I'm a little guy. I thought, you know, let's keep going with that theme.
So if you'd like to join the show, 888-2-H-A-N-S-O-N. That's 888-242-6766 to get on the air with Hanson McLean.
And we're going to talk with Ron. Ron, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi there.
Hi, Ron.
I got a notice from Social Security that my Social Security was being cut back. And I traced it down to the fact that I had earned a lot of money last year, and so Medi-Cal wasn't going to pay for my Medi-Cal anymore. I was going to have to pay for it. But my main concern is
Medi-Cal or Medi-Cal or Medicare?
Medi-Cal.
Okay.
I was receiving. Prior to the letter, I was receiving $1,240 a month, and the state was paying for my Medi-Cal. My wife was receiving about $540 a month, and the state was paying for her Medi-Cal. And I went to Social Security, and they told me to go to the state. And so I went to the state, and they told me, they said, yeah, this is because you earned all that money last year. The state is no longer going to pay for your Medicare.
Medicare, not Medi-Cal. Yeah.
Okay. I wonder why we're looking.
Yeah, that's why I asked the question.
When I was talking to the representative, I was told that Medi-Cal is what is involved in this Medicare.
So what did you do last year to earn all this money?
Well, I only had a job for 3 months, but I was making a lot. I was working a lot of hours, and I made several $1,000 paychecks.
Okay.
So that put me over and above the amount of money the state allows you to earn before they start making you pay for your Medicare.
Okay. And
Medicare.
And your question for us is?
Well, I was told by somebody that the state. Not the state, that Social Security is starting a program, or maybe the program's already in force, where they're going to reduce everybody's Social Security benefits. And they told me that if I didn't do anything about fighting it until before the end of the month.
Oh, got it. So, but you're on Social Security, and your wife is on Social Security, correct?
Correct.
Okay. So what they're talking about is file and suspend. Does that sound familiar?
They're both recipients of Social Security.
I know, but I think he's confusing it.
I don't know what he's talking about.
That's the only thing that actually takes place between now and the end of the month is the file and suspend. That's the only change, and it doesn't affect you. There's no effect on you whatsoever.
So we're not sure what your question is, Ron.
Well, the notice I got from the state was that my $1,240 a month was gonna be reduced next month to $876, and after that I would only receive $1,120 a month. And my wife's $540 next month is gonna be reduced to $182.40. And after that, it'll be $426 a month.
Okay, so it sounds like you're starting to have to pay for Part Medicare Part B.
That's what it sounds like. Does that sound familiar?
Yeah,
it's Medicare Part B.
Yeah, Yeah, that's what I ran into when I went and talked to the state representative.
Yeah, it's Medicare Part B because your income is high, and there's a lesson for everyone here, which is that number that they give you in Social Security is not locked in stone. It is going to be needs based at some point in time. So, Ron, if things are tight, my recommendation would be to try to go back to that job.
Yes, and continue some
and
work.
Continue to work.
Yeah.
Especially if they're already withholding the money from you, have at it.
Yeah. And if you're 66, your normal retirement age, you can work without any restriction.
Absolutely.
And so if you've got the health, then you can get a job. But yeah, we would both encourage that.
So here's the thing about Social Security, Scott.
There's a couple of lessons here.
Right?
Well, first of all, save while you're young and working.
Yes.
Save while you're young and working.
Yes.
You never know. Look, the last study I saw, 58% of people retire earlier than they had planned. One out of two of us. Something happens with our job. Something happens with our health, the health of a loved one. Suddenly we find ourselves unable to work. We don't have a job anymore. We're in early retirement. We're in some sort of retirement. That's why it's crucial. One of the things we talk about at Hanson McLean, we've encouraged people over the years, is to save, begin saving. And it doesn't matter your pay.
Oh, well, it does some.
All right, it says some. Okay.
It does some.
But the importance needs, and granted, if your income is, if you're on minimum wage, it's going to be hard for you to save much. Even with the increases in minimum wage, pretty difficult to save for retirement. But that's assuming you're the majority of Americans. But it takes some discipline. But you want to be at a point of retirement so that you've got some options at retirement, some financial options, right? I mean, that's the thing. But on Social Security, Pat, you...
So here's the thing about Social Security. If you went back 30 years ago, Social Security was not taxed. Regardless of your income, the benefit wasn't taxed.
That's correct.
And then they started taxing 50% of the benefit for family incomes, couples.
Might have been 35 years ago. But anyway, yeah, it was tax-free.
Then
they began taxing half of it because they're...
Yeah, it incomes of over $32,000.
And the argument they had is, well, the employer gets a tax deduction on the payroll tax. So half the money comes from the employer, that gets a tax deduction. So it's only fair for us to tax half of it.
Then they started taxing a few years after they started taxing 50%. Then they started taxing 85% of Social Security benefits of incomes of over $44,000 for a couple.
Yeah, 85%. I don't know what, there was no rationale behind it.
There was no rationale other than there was not a huge uproar when they taxed it at 50% of the benefit. So that is a form of needs based. I'm going to give you something and then I'm going to tax you on it if your income's high enough.
Chris Christie, a presidential candidate, was advocating for some sort of needs-based Social Security system. We also saw a Republican senator from Oregon, I believe it was advocating for some sort of need-based
Social Security. So, first of all, the second thing you learned on this is that the benefits that the government is going
I was
to
having
give you.
I got an argument with someone, Pat, a couple weeks ago. I was back in a conference back in New York when someone, they have some financial program. They're trying to pitch to financial advisors on Social Security. And I said, at what point do you take into the possibility that higher income retirees may have a reduction in benefits because of needs based? He's like, what are you talking about? Well, that'll never happen. What do you mean it'll never happen?
It already
has. Has it even taken into consideration? Shouldn't you judge every investment on what possible risk there might be?
It's called legislative risk. There's a name for this type of risk. It's legislative
Absolutely.
Risk.
Absolutely. It's something to look
you
at.
You want to see what happened recently? Pfizer in the merger?
Yep.
That was legislative risk.
That wasn't even legislative. That was executive branch risk.
Legislative risk.
That was the
rules were changed. So here's the thing with Social Security. If you're of normal retirement age and you are not working, then you should probably, and you don't need the money, you should probably start Social Security. In fact, when we come back from the break, I'm going to spend a little bit of time, a couple minutes talking about this.
Real quick, because we got a great webinar at our website, moneymatters.com, that we'll need to invite people to as well. Anyway, right now we're up against the clock. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Get a podcast of Hanson McLean's Money Matters delivered each week to your computer or mobile device. Simply visit moneymatters.com. And now, back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. I'm Scott Hanson.
I'm Pat McLean.
I'm sorry.
Are you laughing at me? I keep track of what we have. Four segments in an hour show, and sometimes I get caught up and I forget what segment we're in. So at the beginning of every segment, I write the number down.
Well, you pointed to me. You're wondering if we're like at number.
Because a couple weeks ago, you left early. Leaving early on the third. You're like packing up. And
I know. I was confused.
You were like leaving.
I get confused sometimes.
You were leaving in the sixth inning of a 9-inning game. That's a sports analogy for you there, Scott Hansen. So, Social Security. We started talking.
By the way, I'm not one of those that leave. I tend to never leave a sports game early unless it's such a blowout one way or the other.
Mm.
Isn't that interesting?
Wow.
I can tell, but it's pretty much that, they say that, 8% of communication is verbal, the rest nonverbal, whatever. I don't know if it's quite that true anyway, but
it was pretty.
Not only the body language, the tone of your voice, the inflection was pretty much, I really don't give a crap.
Good for you. Stay to the end of the game.
I could care less. That's really interesting.
Have some crack.
Great anecdotes you got there.
Anyway, Social Security.
Real quick. So, and then we're going to go to the calls. And there's still time to take some calls. 888-2-HANSON to join the show. 888-2-HANSON. We'll take your call if you want to call. 888-2-HANSON. Still time.
Okay. So the thing about Social Security, because there's legislative risk, and the people that are most likely to lose Social Security benefits.
Legislative risk in the fact that it could be more needs-based in the future. It already is somewhat needs-based by the way they tax it. They give it to you in one hand, take some away in the other. But it could become more needs-based in the future.
I would expect that it's going to be more needs-based
I would
in
absolutely
the future.
Expect it would be. That's the kind of planning we do with people anyway.
I would be.
You need to plan that it could. It's a possibility, at least.
I would.
And I had this argument with somebody. I said, look, if you're going to judge an investment, this was somebody who writes on Social Security a lot. Oh, you're ridiculous. That'd never happen. I said, look, if you're going to invest in something, let's say a bond, would you not look at the credit worthiness? What is the likelihood that bond will not be repaid? You'd go through all the different risk possibilities.
And even some you don't know, like Puerto Rico right now. Suspending payments on their bond just because they said we're suspending payments on our bond. We're not going to attack Puerto Rico. The government's not going to attack Puerto Rico. So that's risk.
Looking at Social Security, you'd have to say, what are the potential risks there? Well, one major risk is that Congress changes the game sometime in the future.
So if you're of normal retirement age.
And we're not saying it's not going to be there in the future. I'm convinced it'll be there. If I were a betting man, I would bet that 10 years from now, there'll be either increased taxation on Social Security or a flat-out reduction in benefits for high-incomers. I mean, look at the way that
I would bet
the discussion that's already been about the income inequality. Now you're going to, as soon as someone puts a big spotlight on a real high-income retiree and the Social Security benefits they're earning.
Yeah, someone that's making $1 million a year.
And you got a couple families that are at lower income trying to make things happen. And
so here's the moral of the story. If you are of normal retirement age and are not working and don't need the Social Security benefit.
I mean, really don't need it.
Don't need it. Your income is high enough that you don't need it. You should seriously consider taking it early.
Yep.
If you do need it, then you should probably consider deferring it as long as possible and
maybe
allowing that benefit to grow. That's the moral
of
the story.
It'll be there for those that need it.
Yes. But those that don't need it.
Need is a subjective term. We understand.
So let's go to the phones. We're going to talk to Kathy.
And by the way, Catherine, go in there in a second. At Hanson McLean, we've got a great webinar on Social Security.
Oh, I forgot about
that. If you want to dig in some more on Social Security, go to moneymatters.com. We have a webinar on Social Security. If you're approaching retirement, or maybe you're sitting there right now trying to figure out what you should do, go to the webinar at moneymatters.com, webinar on Social Security. So, Catherine, we apologize for that false start there. But anyway, Catherine, you're with Hanson McLean.
Hi.
Hi, Catherine.
My question has to do with stock certificates, because I was listening to your show this past Saturday, and it brought to mind my father recently downsized houses a few years ago, actually, and during the unpacking, et cetera, I came across an old stock certificate of his from when he worked at Georgia Pacific back in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
And so I was like, at the time I took a picture of it. I'm afraid I don't have it now, but at the time I took a picture of it, And I went to the internet and was trying to find out, what do you do with that? And I couldn't find any answers. So my question is, if you have an old stock certificate like that, what do you do with it? And how do you find out its value?
Is your father still alive?
Yes.
All right. One simple thing is to look at his tax return, see if he has any 1099 each year from any dividends. A couple things could happen. One, this stock certificate could still be valid, right? It could be some ownership still there.
Georgia Pacific was bought out by a private equity firm in the 80s. How old is this?
I don't recall that.
Is the certificate?
It's like I said, he worked for them in the 60s. Then we moved to Saudi Arabia for Aramco in the 70s. So it's in the 60s.
Okay. How many years did you live in Saudi Arabia? I know this is totally 16. Off topic. What's that?
16.
I don't think I've ever talked to a woman who's lived in Saudi Arabia.
Well, do you want to make this show about this, Scott?
Maybe.
Tell us what it was like as a woman in Saudi Arabia.
I just last week read about one of the leaders of Saudi Arabia was still stating why it's a bad idea for women to be drivers. And I'm reading this thinking, my gosh.
All right, we'll answer your question if you answer a couple of ours, Catherine.
Well, I was a child in Saudi Arabia.
All right. Well, then it's a good thing you weren't driving.
You probably went to an American school as well.
And lived in a compound of some sort.
We lived in an American compound. My mother could drive within the compound.
Oh.
So, yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. So back to your question, which was the point of the phone call. So there's two things. One is it may have been turned over to the state as a lost asset. It may have been turned over to the state as a lost asset.
Odds are.
Which state, though?
Would have been the state that of California, most likely.
What state?
He's actually, at the time, he worked for Georgia Pacific in Oregon, then in Washington, and then in Maine before we went to Saudi Arabia.
Are they still a private company?
I don't know.
I have no idea. And Georgia Pacific being a private company or not.
I don't know. Is it traded?
I don't know.
It looked like it when I looked on the internet today. It had a GPX.
So it's got a transfer agent.
Yeah. So what you're going to want to do is contact just go online to the company. There'll be investor relations. And if you contact investor relations, tell them the story, and you'll get a referral to who their transfer agent is. There's a record keeper who says you own the shares or you don't own shares. That's where I would start.
And we've seen it. I mean, that people come in with certificates that they're 25, 30 years old. And
you see that there's been splits and stuff after that, and they owned a lot more than they thought they owned.
Yeah, I had a lady.
That's not always the norm. So don't
but
get too
I had
sad.
A lady come in to my office with, I remember this, she had a paper bag filled with stock certificates of some of the regional Bell operating companies after AT&T split up in 1984. She came in and she said, I found these old stock certificates at home. It was worth $140,000. I remember.
Yeah, that's why I don't want to just leave in a drawer. I kind of want to find out what the value of that thing
and
is.
It's a lot
there is still a value.
And it's a lot easier when he's alive to get these assets. So investor relations on their website, and then they'll give you the name of the transfer agent. And the transfer agent should have some records. If you can't, it may have been what they call a sheeted. Which is, I would look under the state of California.
It could have been that if it was bought out at that time where he could have actually received cash for it and he couldn't find the stock certificate and signed an affidavit saying it was lost or destroyed.
And that's not unusual at all.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of old certificates out there that have no value.
But it is worth looking into.
So start with Georgia Pacific themselves.
Website, investor relations. And then
they employ people to make sure that their investors are happy.
And then they'll put you in touch with the transfer agent, which handles the accounting of the ownerships of the stock shares. And then they'll give you direction. Alrighty?
All right.
All right. Thank you.
Good luck, Catherine. I'm glad you weren't driving over in Saudi Arabia, by the way, because he was a child, is what I meant on that one. So thanks for calling. This is interesting, right?
Yeah, of course it is.
So at Hanson McLean, Pat, we've had over the years a number of people. Matter of fact, a lot of times people come to our firm or firms like us, like ours, at a time when they realize they need to get some organization going on with their finances, right? Maybe retirement's a few years out. They've got some accounts set up here. They have an IRA from here. They have an old 401k plan that's at a previous employer. They've got some mutual funds here, and things are kind of all over there.
They're collectors.
I don't know what I've got, really, and that's oftentimes a good starting point. A lot of times people will engage with a financial advisor just at that. It's like, look, retirement's still a few years off, but we're just trying to get things organized. And the way accounts work today and the way we do with a lot of our clients, you could have stocks, mutual funds, everything, all in one account.
In a brokerage account.
All in one simple account and have one statement.
And it doesn't mean you're going to get charged for everything that sits in there. It's just that it shows and up and you know how it's titled.
In this day and age, I don't see any benefit to holding stock certificates.
In fact, most companies won't issue stock certificates.
A lot of them don't even issue them anymore.
Won't issue them anymore.
Because it really doesn't matter. It's all what the transfer agent says.
Whatever the transfer, it doesn't matter what the certificate says. They're not bearer bonds.
Yeah, so it just tends to make life a lot easier. If you've got stock certificates sitting around, still old stock certificates, if you put them in a brokerage account, you get everything. And then at the end of the year, you get one 1099. You don't get several from all these
different
companies.
And the checks come. Actually, the dividends go right back into the brokerage account. Yeah.
Anyway, if you want to join Hanson McLean, we still have some time for some calls. 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-2-HANSON. Love to take your call. When we come back, we got phenomenal program still left. This is Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
To join the show, call us at 1-888-2-HANSON. That's 1-888-2-HANSON. 1-888-242-6766. Can't always catch Money Matters on the radio each week? Get a podcast of the show delivered to your device every week. Visit moneymatters.com. Now back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
Welcome back to Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Scott Hanson.
Pat McLean, thanks for sticking with us.
Yes, sticking with us. We'll talk about financial matters. And you might have heard about this before. We talked about it a bit. It's been in the news. We thought we'd share just a bit of our little insights and twists in regards to it. And that's a rule that was recently passed by the Department of Labor that requires or will require people who hold themselves out as financial advisors, those offering financial advice to retirement plan assets. The law is going to require that those advisors must put the investor's interest ahead of their own.
Whatever that means.
So if you're thinking, wait a minute.
Doesn't mine already?
Doesn't my broker already put my interests?
Doesn't the person I give my life savings to and trust put my interest above their own?
See, currently, the way things work is if you have a 401k through your employer must act as a fiduciary. Your employer must act in your best interest when putting together a 401k plan, menu of choices, etc.
And selecting that menu of choices for you.
Yes.
So not only is your employer responsible for running the business, payroll taxes, regulations, but on your 401k, your investments have to make sure that it is in your best interest.
Yes. Now, currently, let's say you leave that employer and you go enroll your IRA over to a different firm. Depending on the structure of that firm.
You roll your 401k over into an IRA.
Depending on the structure of that firm, the person offering investment advice may or may not be acting in your best interest. There is currently no legal duty for them to act in your best interest. You might be dealing with some insurance agent who calls themselves a financial advisor, but when you look at their business card, works for an insurance company, offers up some index annuity or maybe an expensive variable annuity into the IRA that may not even be in your best interest. Something else might be in your best interest.
And it may be in his or her best interest because of a fee-sharing agreement that takes place in a back room outside of your view.
Or a commission. No, this product doesn't cost anything. All of your money goes to work for
you. Oh, how many times have you heard that?
It costs nothing. There's no fees in this.
It costs nothing.
Yeah. Somehow the insurance company this must be manna from heaven how they keep the lights on.
So this fiduciary, the most interesting thing about it is, in my mind, is the Department of Labor is the one that actually got it done.
So currently, even today, until this takes place next April, even today, you can have a broker, insurance agent, whatever, make a recommendation, sell you some financial product that might not even be in your best interest, but as long as it's what's deemed suitable,
whatever that means,
that's fine for them to do so.
So they could say, here's investment A, and here's investment B. And they could be identical. And one might cost you three times as much, and that is still considered suitable.
Yes. So the Department of Labor, because the Securities Exchange Commission hasn't really acted on this, the Department of Labor really essentially extended their reach, and they said, you know, IRAs, most of the money in IRAs come from 401ks.
Pension plans.
We have, under the Employee Retirement Income Security Act,
ERISA,
we have responsibility and authority to regulate these plans and to set policy.
Even though they have left the employer's purview.
Yeah, I don't know if they have power to regulate. So they came and stated, you know what? We are going to put forward this fiduciary standard for all retirement plan assets, whether it's a 401k
or
IRA.
If it's good enough for retirement plan assets, shouldn't it be good enough for all assets?
Well, so therein's the rub, which is why we're discussing it right here.
Let me just share something with you. I saw investment recommendations in this last month from a financial advisor firm that sickened me. And I don't use that term lightly. Let's just say I saw what this gentleman was doing to a person who came in and visited our firm and said, this is what my advisor is trying to do. I called the investment advisor and told the investment advisor what I thought they were doing was criminal.
Well, they weren't an investment advisor.
Well, they called themselves. They were a broker. And I said, I called the guy. I couldn't hold my tongue. I called him and I said, what you're doing was nothing but a commission grab. There was no economic reasons to do what you did or what you recommended to that client. And I did suggest that he possibly consider leaving the industry because he was not serving his clients.
Yeah, making recommendations.
Solely based on commission.
To generate, yeah.
Commissions.
So with this new rule from the Department of Labor, which won't go into effect until April of 2017.
And that's when they start.
This will put protection in place for retirement assets. But how about the other? How do you know? So today, there are firms out there that act as fiduciaries.
There are many. We are a firm that acts as a fiduciary. We act as a fiduciary, which means your interests become bigger than our own. Your interests are first. It doesn't mean we work for free. It means that you know what we charge, that we're actually making recommendations that are in your best interest.
We are a fee-based registered investment advisory firm, RIA, registered investment advisory firm. That is the distinction. Even these big, a lot of these big brokerage firms are not fiduciaries. There's one big brokerage firm, they won't even allow their certified financial planners to put certified financial planner on their business cards because that certified financial planner, by definition, must act as a fiduciary at all times.
Is that right?
That's correct.
I did not know
I didn't know that either. Someone told me a few months back. I thought, I can't believe it.
I did not. Are you liberty to say the name of the firm?
I'm not 100% sure which firm it was. So
okay.
I don't want to throw them under the bus unless I'm absolutely
positive.
Yeah,
that's a good idea.
And so otherwise, I would say with the firm. Let's just say it's a large national firm. I mean, Hanson McLean, we are a registered investment advisory firm. We have a legal duty to put our clients' interests ahead of ours, not just in retirement assets and not after April 2017, but on all assets that we manage.
So here's what was so good about this new rule.
And there are other registered investment advisory firms out there that have this fiduciary standard as well.
What was so good about this is that I don't think you're going to see these non-traded REITs in IRAs anymore. You're not going to see these index annuities. And the best thing about this is hopefully the consumer protection.
I don't know how you're going to see some of these index annuities sold in this plans.
I don't know. But you, hopefully you'll see
some of these products, Pat,
SEC
have surrender periods that go 15, 20 years that pay commissions of 15%.
I know.
To their insurance agents.
Yeah, when you buy a product that the surrender charge is twice as long as the average marriage, it's not a good idea.
Average marriage.
Not a good idea. But that's what was good. And hopefully what we're going to see is the rest of the regulators, the SEC, the Consumer Protection Bureau, will come in and actually start getting rid of these other garbage products.
Because that's the problem. There are products that are, for whatever reason, the state insurance, well, I know why, it's lobbyists. Have a lot of power, just like lobbyists of the financial industry got this
fiduciary
rule watered down quite a bit from what it was supposed to become. But we are seeing some things in the right direction. We're also seeing now, at least, when brokers leave, they get a big check waved in front of them to go to another firm. At least now they're required to notify their clients that there could be a conflict of interest.
They're supposed to.
Well, now they're going to be required to state.
They're supposed to.
Even if they abide by the rules.
Yes.
Yes.
So it's just this shame. Is good.
This so is, this is good. This is good.
This is good for the consumer.
We don't like the fact that a Department of Labor is the one.
I wish someone that was already regulating our industry.
How someone could come and say this is bad, I would question their judgment. And I would question, frankly, someone who says they are against this, I would say, where is their compensation today and how will this change?
Well, this actually requires disclosed compensation.
The only people that I've seen that have been opposed to this are ones that were going to have an economic interest to
Scott,
see that
but
this.
That's human nature. I mean, that's just human nature. I think it's just stating.
If your advisor has been
The problem has been is lack of disclosure in the products that are sold. That's what the problem's been.
Well, but, and no, and it's worse than that.
Because people wouldn't buy the products if they were disclosed all the bad stuff in it.
Disclosed on page.
Okay.
48, line 7.
All right,
seven.
So we've got less
that's
than a minute left.
The problem is,
if you go to Money Matters, Scott's new book, Personal Decision Points, 7 Steps to Your Ideal Retirement Transition by
Turner.
Scott Hansen.
It is.
Unbelievable. Oh. We're optioning the movie rights right now. Right
the
now.
The movie rights.
The movie rights to Personal Decision Points, 7 Steps. You can
it's
get it
not
on,
a novel, by the way.
You can get it on Amazon.
I don't know what kind of movie it would be.
You get it on a long and boring movie. You get it on Amazon. No, it's a quick read. If you're within 5 years of retirement
really
or you're
retirement
retiring
transition.
Right now, you need to read it. Go to Amazon or you can go to our website, Money Matters.
We might have some special promo code.
MoneyMatters.com/book.
MoneyMatters.com/book. And I think there might be a promo code to get a discounted. We probably should be giving these away to our callers.
In the future,
yeah,
we will give them away.
Sorry. In the future. Anyway, and sorry we didn't get to all the calls. Call next week. We'll get you on. This has been Hanson McLean's Money Matters.
This program has been brought to you by Hanson McLean's Money Matters. Any ideas presented during this program are not intended to provide specific advice, and you should consult your own financial advisor or conduct your own due diligence.